In today's episode, I'd like to discuss how can we scale CPU-intensive backends. How about we jump into it? Hey guys, if you're enjoying my content, make sure to check out my Udemy courses. I have two courses, Introduction to Database Engineering course, over 14 hours worth of exclusive content, right? And also my Python on the backend course. Check them out. The link will be in the pinned comment below. It supports the show. Thank you so much. Welcome to the Backend Engineering Show with your host, Hussein Nasser. This is the show where we discuss the art and the craft of building software and cover recent news on backend technologies. If you enjoy the show, make sure to subscribe to the YouTube channel and rate it on Spotify and Apple Podcast. With that said, let's get on the show. Welcome to the Backend Engineering Show with your host, Hussein Nasser. And before we start, we really need to define what do we really mean by CPU-intensive workloads or backends? And what do we really mean by scaling here, right? And to me, scaling, when we say scaling, a lot of people think that, oh, I'm going to just spin up multiple machines and just throw my workload on these machines. I usually don't look at scaling this way, because I think this is extremely inefficient scaling. We always unfortunately run into these fancy things like Docker containers and microservices, and then okay, let's just distribute everything. But we really underestimate the power of a single machine and how can you effectively saturate a single machine, right, before you even think, right, of the idea of scaling, because it all starts from a single machine. And that's why I always like to think about things. And you, when I say machine, you can think of a physical machine, which is like my representation of things all the time. And then you can think of a virtual machine. Things change a little bit there. You can also think of a Docker container with certain allocated resources to it. Right, you can really slide your equalizer anywhere you want. But let's talk about an actual machine, physical machine here. All right. And so scaling to me here is saturate that machine so that you can take advantage of almost 90%, 95%, leaving some resources for the system to do its work, or for some important work that the machine has to do, like input output, talking to the network, stuff like that, right? Sending packets out of the network, you need CPU for that, unfortunately, right? So you need to leave some work, some resources for these kind of things. But effectively, how do you scale the machine vertically, right? Just whatever cores, memory you have, you were given, like how can you effectively take as much from that machine before considering the next step of scaling, which is horizontally scale. So let's spin up. Now that I know I'm so efficient, right? I'm taking so much of this machine, right? I can go up to, right, this much of this single machine. Now I can effectively just spin up multiple machines, right, and then scale my workload horizontally, so vertically and horizontally. I know some people think of vertical part scaling as just like add more cores, but you can only add more cores if your software actually take advantage of these resources, right? If your workload can go up to 20% of the machine and just leaves it, doesn't go by beyond that, and then you go and add more machines, that's waste, right, if you think about it. So now that's what I mean by scaling. Now let's go, what do we mean by CPU-intensive workload? CPU-intensive workloads are pure CPU-intensive workload is really a process or even backends that you build and spin up that is just using the CPU and and doesn't do anything else. It doesn't hit a database. It doesn't talk to another service through I/O. There's no I/O per se going outside the machine or to disk, right? There is a little bit of an I/O in memory itself, but if you want to go to pure CPU intensive, you don't even leave the CPU, right? You're purely living in the CPU and its cache and its registers, right? You don't even leave that realm of the CPU. That's a pure CPU intensive. They're obviously rare, but an example is crypto mining, right? These miners, it's like they solve equations. Almost there is no writing to disk. You don't write anything to disk, maybe results or stuff like that, but that's one thing, right? Encryption is a CPU intensive workload as well. Scientific calculations, stuff like that, right? So backends that are CPU intensive tend to be completely stateless. That means when you send a request to that backend, right, and it receives that request, all it does, it just takes that request and then it lives in the CPU, just does all the processing and then return the response to you. There's no state stored intermediate that the machine relies on. So this is CPU intensive workload. And this is as opposed to the I/O bound, right? Or CPU bound, I/O bound workloads most of the time I/O bound is just, hey, you read something from disk and you just wait for it to come back, right? So the CPU isn't doing much work. It's just waiting. So the CPU obviously is not just waiting for this. It's going to do some other stuff. It's going to get scheduled. So the CPU will do something else meanwhile, but it's most of the time it's just waiting. You're reading from this, so or you're reading from a network, you're just sending a request to another machine that does the actual work, right? But you is just sitting there doing nothing, right? So that's the idea of CPU bound versus I/O bound. So we're talking about CPU bound. We understand what CPU bound is, CPU intensive workload. We understand what I/O bound, no. We understand what scaling is. Now, how will we actually scale the CPU intensive workloads? If you think about a single, if my backend is listening on a port, right, and you can pick any protocol, right, HTTP, normal, TCP, right, once you receive a request or a packet to process this request on the backend, right, you now live on the CPU land. And usually we can solve this problem many way. You can break your CPU intensive workload so that it is multi-threaded and just that single workload just split up and just start running onto multiple threads, and as a result it will start using multiple cores in your machine. So that's very effective, but sometimes breaking this, right, doing multi-threading is sometimes difficult, and you have to think about how can I break this, like just sometimes not possible. If it's possible, then this you're efficiently distributing. I'm in a single machine, right? It's a single workload CPU that doing this operation. You're doing multi-threading, and then you're distributing the work. If you can't do that, then that single workload will hog a single core, and it's just gonna be there and slamming that core, single core, just gonna be 99% busy doing that thing. Okay, so if you think about it, how can I scale this? How much can I go? Well, let's say my machine is 8 core. Well, I can go up to 8 processes, 8 backend services listening on the same machine. Let's have them listen to a different ports, right? Or you can listen to the same port if you use this shared socket options reuse port. I think I'm going to put in the screen Linux option where you can listen to the same port. Doesn't matter, right? You're listening to multiple ports or listening to the same port. Okay. And now you can go up to 8. But if you think about it, this is if you do receive 8 concurrent requests to do the CPU intensive workload, then your machine is is completely hogged. It is doing 100% doing all this work. So now the system is going to suffer doing its own normal operations. And you might say, Hussein, I don't care about the system. I'm okay. Let's take 100% of that machine. This is a little bit radical. You can do that, definitely. But sometimes you need to talk to the machine to shut it down, to restart it. You need to do a remote. You need to SSH into it. You need to do something to that machine. You need to listen to it somehow, right? So as a result, you need, like it or not, the backend itself need to do some work because it's listening on a port, right? So it's doing some packet processing. So that needs some cores as well. And it depends what protocol do you use. That CPU is going to go up and down based on what kind of protocol you're using, right? So you have to think about all this stuff when you build an actual production level backends, right? But let's say we're going to leave a core for system. I'm going to use 7 out of the 8 cores. So you can spin up to 7 processes. Beautiful, right? And now if I receive 7 concurrent requests, right? I can distribute these among my processes. You can make things easier and listen to the same port and let Linux does the distribution for you. It's just, I think it goes around robin when you do a socket option reuse port. We'll receive a request to port 8080, for example, but there are 7 processes listening on port 8080. And you might say, Hussein, you can't listen, 2 processes cannot listen to the same port. Yeah, there is an option to do that. You can override that in Linux. And then when you receive a packet, right, a send request to establish connection, Linux is smart enough to always go to the same process. It will just almost make a sticky connection to that process. So upcoming requests from the same source port, source IP, will always go to the same process. And we'll just do the load balancing for you. So that's the cleanest way to do things, in my opinion. So now you have some sort of a load balancing with minimum efforts, right? You got to leave a core or two. I don't know how many, you need to practice this, right? And see how your machine really react, like how much work Linux needs to do this load balancing, if you need to SSH into the machine or not. You need some cores left for that. So you can do 7 or 6. And then if you're gonna hammer these requests, right, any upcoming request will go to these 7, right, until they are saturated doing the work. Future requests, they're gonna wait. They're gonna get queued up in the Linux, right? Kernel or the network stuff, right? That's interesting. I don't know what really happened during the queuing parts of things. It's very interesting. I believe Linux acknowledges the packet but puts it in the queue, in the operating system queue, until it's some of the machines are free to receive, some of the processes are free to receive these packets again. But it's very interesting to think about that. Now we are looking at the single core. And some of you might say, Hussein, this is kind of a waste if you think about it, right? Because as you're talking about physical cores here, 8 cores or 8 physical cores. But most machines, most CPUs have this idea of hyper-threading, right? The idea of having a single core act like 2 logical processes, right? Logical cores, effectively, right? Processor is the whole thing and it has 8 cores. But to the operating system, it looks and it sees, oh, I'm seeing 16 cores, right? There are 16 logical cores while we have 8, right? And the idea is all because of the time slicing. Most of the time, when you, even in a CPU intensive workload, sometimes you need to read from RAM and you write to RAM, and that millisecond, not even millisecond, microsecond, in that microsecond, the CPU is waiting for to write and read from the I/O and RAM, right? In that few microseconds. In that, the CPU can be snuck in and do something else, right? And I don't understand how these hardware things work. I think Linux, the tech tips, have a video or two about this hyper-threading. Also, Gary explains channel talk about the hardware. I'm not that great in hardware. So it is a single core, but to the operating system, it looks like two effectively, and it will be it will schedule two requests effectively to the CPU. So that you can take advantage of that and say, okay, I'm not going to spend just 7 out of my 8 cores. I'm going to spend, 14, 15 processes. Will you get the same performance? I honestly don't know, right? You might squeeze. It depends, again, on your workload. If your workload is purely CPU, is living in the CPU and it's using pure registers, it's not leaving to go anywhere, no I/O, no RAM, then yeah. Maybe then I don't think you can take advantage of hyper-threading. But if you're going to the RAM and doing some stuff like that, then yeah, you're going to do some context switching. You're going to go leave that. You can squeeze some performance out of that. Again, to me, I don't know. We can try. If it was this is my production, I'm going to try enable hyper-threading, see the performance, and spin up 16. See how much requests per second I can execute and compare to without hyper-threading, for example, or without this idea of having multiple. So now we're still living in a single machine, guys, right? We didn't even leave that machine. Try to suck the life out of that single machine. Take every performance advantage you can take from that single machine, right? And we can think about multiple things. But now, how do I scale it horizontally? Which is really not the hard part, if you think about it. Let's put a load balancer on top of that. And that is what is exposed to the user. And now, I'm going to put the same machine. I'm going to clone it. Whatever I did for that machine, I spin up 7 or 17 processes, whatever the number that I think is efficient to completely saturate that machine so that it doesn't completely cripple. I still can do stuff with it, but that's how much I can take advantage of a single machine. Now you can scale it, right? Just like spin up 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7 machines, right? Again, when I say machine, you can think of a virtual machine, right? Which kind of adds another factor, right? If you're using a hypervisor, add some work. So your cores are really not pure cores. Right, there's some work the hypervisor is doing. Right, you have to play with those. Right, and take it into consideration. Containers, the whatever the container management solution. Right, that does the work as well. But regardless, I'm spinning all these machines up now. I have a load balancer, HA proxy, Nginx, all this fancy stuff, Envoy. Now my request goes to the load balancer, and then it will just basically spin these requests to all these machines. Now the load balancer should be smart enough to know what machines are doing this work effectively, right? And how filled are they? And can I actually make requests to these? And there are a lot of load balancing algorithms that you can consider. Right, least recently used, least connection used, I believe. If you have the least number of connections to this machine, that means you can do more, right? You can send request more to this machine, right? That's just by the fact of looking at the TCP connections and how many connections I have to the backend. And you can effectively use that algorithm. That's the simplest one. Round robin is not a good idea for this, I believe. Round robin, if you use the default round robin, you don't know. If your CPU intensive workload is predictable, I don't know, it takes always 1 minute, then round robin is fine, I believe. But if it depends on the input, I don't think you can do round robin. You need something a little bit smarter. You may be needing your own load balancing algorithm. You need to write your own to kind of look at the input, and based on that input, I think this is going to take this much. Based on that, which machines are free, which are not, right? Least connect will work, I believe, because assuming that once you finish the workload, you disconnect the connection to know that you're done. But it's very, very interesting, because load balancers or reverse proxies don't really disconnect the backend, right? They leave the connection for pooling purposes, right? Connection pooling, because the cost of the connection establishment could go higher as well. All right, guys, let's keep it short this episode. I just wanted to talk about the CPU intensive workload. What do you think about this topic? Do you have any other ideas of how you can scale these kind of things in production environments? All right, I'm gonna see you in the next one. You guys stay awesome. Goodbye.